Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 114, the Podcast and New Media Expo, October 6, 2007. Shrink Wrap Radio number 114, the Podcast and New Media Expo, October 6, 2007. October Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional. Hello again, everyone. On the last show, I mentioned I'd been away at the Podcast and New Media Expo in Southern California. Like the last show, today's show does not feature the usual psychological celebrity interview, but instead contains interviews with some of the podcasters I met at this annual event. When I started my podcast about 2 years ago, I didn't know any other podcasters. So this event's been a great way to meet others who share my passion for this medium. When I go off on these trips, it throws off my interview/production schedule. So one way for me to compensate for that is to conduct some interviews at the event. So I hope you won't be put off by two back-to-back shows consisting of these sorts of short interviews. I suspect that Shrink Wrap Radio is not the only podcast you listen to, so I'm hoping you'll find it interesting to hear some behind-the-scenes talk with other podcasters. And also, with each of them, I try to explore a bit of the psychological motivation behind their impulse to be podcasters. So I hope you'll find it interesting. Let's get right into it. Okay, I'm talking to Doug Kay, who is a podcasting visionary and one of the leading innovators and figures in the whole movement here. And Doug, you've started something called the Conversations Network. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and our mission is to capture, preserve, produce, and distribute some spoken word content, that content that would otherwise be lost, some great speeches, lectures, conferences, and so forth. So we have a number of channels like the conversation. I'm sorry, like IT Conversations, Social Innovation Conversations, and others that we produce. And we also have some new initiatives called around Podcore, which is more of a grassroots effort, sort of harnessing the power of citizen journalism in audio and video.
Well, I'm really struck by the what seems like an altruistic impulse behind this. Of course, this podcast is all about psychology, so I'm interested in what your motivation is to do this. It's a lot of work, and it seems like a very generous gesture. So where does that come from?
Well, I think the first word is guilt. No. I was doing a podcast myself a number of years ago. I'm probably the second podcaster on the planet. And I started getting email from people saying that I was changing their lives in all sorts of different ways. People from all over the world who said, you know, I couldn't get to this event. You know, you made a difference in my career, to something that's actually deeper. Or to the venture capitalist who said, you know, I bought a BMW instead of a Mercedes so I could listen to your stuff. But when you get mail from people who say that you're touching their lives, you have to sort of wake up and pay attention to that. And I realized I had the opportunity to do something to make more of a difference than ever I had in my professional career previously. And I decided that one of the ways to do that was to start a nonprofit. A lot of the content that I wanted to get to was from universities and places that would only work in the nonprofit world. So that was part of that motivation.
Well, that's great. I'm certainly one of the beneficiaries of what you've been doing. I've been enjoying IT Conversations and the Conversation Network. What's your take on the psychology of podcast listeners? I know that would be a huge generalization, but do you have some sense of what motivates people to become listeners?
Well, I think it's like any consumption of media or products anywhere. There's an interesting balance between the mass media and the things that are much more personal. You know, we look at sort of a value curve and say if we can touch listeners with the things that really matter to them most, it doesn't matter if it's a small number of listeners. So I think an interesting thing about the psychology aspect is we all have too much to consume and not enough time.
Amen.
And so what we try and do is get the content that is the most meaningful to our listeners. For example, through Podcore, we want to be able to do things like record the school board in Kuala Lumpur. Now, there might only be 100 people in the world who care about that, but they'll be the most passionate. And they will push aside more mass media content in order to get to the things that really matter to them. And I think that's sort of what podcasting is all about. It's about really getting the highest value to the to people. And so if you have a podcast that appeals, if you have a choice of what to listen to, and you have something that's much more specialized to your immediate interests, that's what you're going to pay attention to. So,
yeah, that really makes sense to me. I was thinking about my own podcast last night, and this might apply to podcasts generally. The phrase that came to mind was food for your brain, food for your passion, food for your soul.
Yeah, IT Conversations has a phrase, new ideas through your headphones. And it's what it is. It's all about new ideas. I mean, when we started doing IT Conversations, it was all about IT, as you'd imagine. But we took a chance and we branched out with some not real IT content. We had things about the environment, things about social change. They became our most popular programs, and we couldn't figure out why. And it turned out that if you're in the IT business, your boss may pay for you to go to a tech conference, but he's not going to pay for you to go to a conference that's not IT. And so we were able to bring things to a tech audience that was only peripherally related to their jobs, and that turned out to be something they were more passionate about.
Very interesting. That fits with my experience, too, probably because tech people are the early adopters as podcast listeners. And so it's been surprising to me doing a podcast that's all about psychology to have lots and lots of people who are programmers or work in IT in one capacity or another.
Absolutely. And, you know, our audience has grown from there. I think most of our audience is still tech, but most podcast listeners are still in tech, I would imagine, too, or related to it.
Yeah. Doug Kay, thanks so much for talking to me.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Hi. What's your name?
My name is Heidi Estrin.
And you're a podcaster?
Yes, I am. My show is called The Book of Life.
And what is The Book of Life?
The Book of Life is like Fresh Air, but with a Jewish focus. It's a show about Jewish books, music, websites, film. I'm a librarian, so it's really about any materials you might find in a library like the one where I work. I work in a synagogue library, and the podcast is a way to promote the kinds of materials that I hope the library users will enjoy, give them the backstory.
And what do you get out of doing the podcast? I assume there's some reward, some psychological benefit that you get. What would that be?
Well, the best part is it gives me an excuse to call up authors and talk to them.
Okay.
Because I am kind of a groupie for authors. In addition, I really like the concept that I am helping more readers to find the books that are right for them, as well as the music and so on. But the books are my biggest love. I strongly believe that people don't necessarily know what's out there in terms of good books. They hear about the bestsellers, but they don't know what other wonderful things are being created, and somebody needs to inform them of that, and I hope that I can help with that.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
I am here with
Rhonda Crawley.
And we were sitting next to each other in a presentation about guerrilla marketing, and you seemed like an interesting person to me. And so let me have you tell our audience what you do for a living.
Well, I'm an attorney. I have a new site that has just started off. It's called the Small Biz Map. That's SmallBiz, as in zebra, map, MAP.com. And essentially what I do is I consult, counsel, and help small businesses get their infrastructure set up, particularly from an HR perspective, as well as dealing with a lot of the employment laws.
Okay, well, most people, when they hear the lawyer right away, they get all these big dollar signs in front of their eyes. And it sounds like maybe you have motivations other than money.
Well, absolutely. I've always had an inkling to be an entrepreneur and never really finding exactly what I need in one place. So my website, Small Biz Map, is essentially designed to provide not only a graphical map to help people direct themselves in terms of how to set up their business, but also the backup in terms of documents to show what they need to do, when they need to do it, and how they need to do it.
Okay, well, my podcast is psychological in its orientation. So I'm wondering if, as you look back on your life, if there's been some important transition point or stepping stone or some psychological insight that's helped you become who you are today.
Absolutely. I started off the traditional route as an attorney, working in law firms at 80 hours per week, putting in lots and lots and lots of time and seeing very little reward. And eventually, about 3 years ago, I realized that I was not a very good employee. So it was time for me to take a different step and move in another direction.
Okay, that sounds like an important insight. I can't help but notice also that you're an African-American woman. And so how has that impacted your entry into the profession?
Well, there are not necessarily a lot of barriers per se. There may have been some roads along my journey that I was unaware of, but eventually I find them and I travel the road and figure out what it is next to be done.
Okay, well, that's a great attitude. What was it like for you growing up? Where did you grow up and what kind of messages did you get that kind of helped you get to be here?
I grew up in Los Angeles area. My parents were always had a regular job, but they also had entrepreneurial ventures along the way. So I grew up in that environment. So it wasn't a big leap for me to say, okay, I'm not a great employee. I make a better employer. And so seeing that growing up and knowing that I could do whatever it is that I put my mind to helped me to get to the point I am now.
I'm just making these questions up off the top of my head here. So what's your outlook on race relations in this country for the future? I mean, it seems to me that in some ways we've come a long way. But I'm wondering, what does it look like for you?
That's a difficult question, particularly in light of the two African-American boys that are on trial down in Louisiana right now. The circumstances there are very, very disturbing. They were essentially taunted by one of their white male counterparts. They eventually had enough, and they retaliated against him in a physical manner, which I don't condone. But you always have to make sure that the punishment fits the crime. And we're in 2007, and it's still very clear that when it's related to black males, that the punishment always exceeds the level of the crime.
Yeah, and there's plenty of evidence to substantiate that, I know. I want to thank you for being willing to talk to me and for being as candid as you have been.
Thank you, David, and I appreciate the time with you as well. Look forward to dropping in on your speaking engagement tomorrow.
Hey, thanks a lot. Bye. So, you are?
I'm Malika Eden, and I am. I do a podcast called Speaking of Sex.
Yes, I'm actually looking at your T-shirt here, which says Speaking of Sex. It's a mouthful, and there was just a crowd of males around you I had to rescue you from.
yeah. So, there's a lot of men, not a lot of women.
Yeah, so how have you... That's true, here at the conference, a lot of men... Not a lot of women. The women get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So how have you come to do a podcast on sex?
Mm-hmm. So I am a sexuality educator for Planned Parenthood of Western Washington. And a group of folks kind of came together and wanted to move into media and thinking about how we can reach folks in a different way. And the idea of podcasting came up. So myself and my co-worker Nathan Ingebretson was approached, and we were asked to kind of help create a podcast, and we ended up being the producers and co-hosts of the show. So it was kind of a collaborative effort in our affiliate in Planned Parenthood of Western Washington.
Okay, well, you're a sexual educator, and I think there must be some psychological issues involved in that endeavor. So I wonder, what kinds of psychological issues do you confront with the recipients of sexual education when you're trying to do that?
You know, well, I've never really thought of it that way, but I guess probably a lot of the same things that people deal with when they're talking about other challenging issues, which are kind of their own personal needs and desires and how they express or share that with a partner or with another person, and kind of our past history. So how our families or our communities talked about sexuality, and, you know, then we're 35 and what have we been holding on to all of those years? Did we come from a community that was really sex positive and really talked about how sexuality is something that's really important and should be shared with two people? Or did we come from a community where people never talked about sexuality and told us our bodies were bad and it was shameful to even think about wanting to be sexual? So I think those are some of the things that that we deal with and we think about, is kind of how did communities and families really impact who we are as sexual beings now?
Well, that raises the question then of how you got, you know, what draws you to this? And you're wearing a T-shirt, you know, that has a frank sexual message. So what is it in your background or history that has led you to this work?
Mm-hmm. I had a mother who was really supportive of me being aware of my body and understanding that my body belonged to me and that I got to choose how I dealt with my body and shared my body, but made it really clear that my body did belong to me, and so I could ask people not to touch me or to touch me, right? That I got to make those decisions. And so I felt really empowered around talking about sexuality and asking questions when I was confused, or seeing couples that look different than other couples, and having a person in my life who was really willing to kind of help me navigate the world and answer questions around sexuality. So someone who's great still. I mean, really great to this day. I can have conversations about relationships and sexuality with her and know that she's going to be really open and honest with me and not like be shameful or tell me lies.
Well, that's great. It's wonderful to have that kind of relationship. I wonder if there has been a point in your life as you look back that was an important psychological turning point, a point of perhaps a key insight for you or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I would have to say that it was probably when I was a senior in high school. I was a peer educator for Planned Parenthood, actually.
Already at that age.
And I really realized how much I loved teaching and doing education, and how important it was for people to be able to talk about issues of sexuality. That, you know, when I would get in front of a classroom and talk about how we keep ourselves healthy and safe and how we protect ourselves from pregnancy if people choose to have sex, students would come up to me after and ask me questions or say it's, you know, so nice to have somebody talking about this. So I think that was a significant time for me when I realized there are lots of people who have questions about bodies and sexuality, and I'm really good at this and want to keep doing this.
Yeah. So what's your view for the future then? Do you have a career plan, a trajectory as you look ahead?
Yeah. You know, I am enjoying what I'm doing right now. I hope to do the podcast for a little bit longer and teach sexuality, but I'm thinking it might be time to go back to grad school and think about what's next, but I'm not exactly sure. I keep thinking nursing. But.
Yeah, you look pretty young, and I was going to ask you what it would be. Yeah, how old are you, if I may ask?
I'm actually 31, so I look younger than
you. You do look younger, yeah. And okay, well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sitting here with Michael Butler of the Rock and Roll Geek Show. I did get that right? The Rock and Roll Geek Show. Tell us what that's about.
It's about rock and roll. I geek out on rock. Hi, Dr. Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And you're also a musician, right? Tell us about that.
I play in a few bands. I'm in a band called American Heartbreak. I play bass. I play in another band called Jet Boy, and I'm a few other things.
And you also work with Pod Show. You've done a lot of work with Pod Show, and you've done a lot to build up the PodSafe Music Network.
That's right. I work on the PodSafe Music Network, artist relations. I'm the guy who gets bands and labels to join up and let podcasters like us play their music without getting sued.
Yeah, and a good job of it you've done, too. So let's get a little bit psychological here. What is it that personally you get out of being a podcaster? What do you think it is in your personality that kind of podcasting lights up?
I like to talk about what my inner feelings are, and it's like good therapy for me. It's kind of like my shrink wrap radio. So I get out my frustrations over the microphone. Like one time I had a really big fight with my wife. I had several fights with my wife, not physical, but my wife gets pissed off at me all the time. So one time I recorded the phone call when she was yelling at me, and I put it up as a podcast.
And did you really?
Yeah. She never heard. Fortunately, she doesn't listen to my show. So there's P.W. Fenton right there, the famous P.W.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'd love to meet him. I love his show. As a matter of fact, now you're also a dad. How many kids do you have?
I have a 17-year-old daughter and I have a 22-year-old stepson.
Okay, and so you know, like you're a long-haired, curly-haired, freaky-looking rock and roller. And so, what's it like to be a rock and roll dad? I mean, there's the whole. You said you don't do drugs. There's the whole world of drugs out there. There's all kinds of stuff. You're living in a world that maybe is kind of a crossover world in some ways. How do you tread that line of being a rock and roll dad?
I don't do drugs. That doesn't mean I have never done drugs.
Right, right. So, what do you tell your kids now?
The kids nowadays, the kids that my daughter hangs out with don't really do drugs anyway, at least not that I know of. She's not really interested in it. I'm pretty straight with her. She doesn't really come to me and ask me, which I wish she would, but I always offer her information before she comes to ask.
Yeah, great.
I tell her what drugs do to you when you're a kid, and she assures me she has no interest in doing them, so we'll see. I worry more about her having sex than doing drugs. Being that she's a beautiful little girl, you know.
Yeah, well, that's an understandable concern
for a
dad.
Right?
Yeah, I do know that she has a podcast. What's her podcast?
She has Emo Girl Talk. She was the first teen podcaster with a major sponsorship, and she got it on her own.
Yeah, I was very impressed by that. Who was the sponsor again?
It was this company called Nature's Cure. They're like an acne medication company.
That sounds really great. Well, let me ask you, I love that story that you told about your wife and putting the fight out on your podcast. Has there been any important sort of psychological stepping stone in your life or turnaround place that you'd be willing to share with the audience?
I have pretty low self-esteem and very insecure, so it kind of helps me with the self-esteem a little bit. And when people listen to my podcast, which helps with the security to it. And plus, I made a lot of friends doing the podcast. Met a lot of people all over the world that I never would have met without doing the podcast. And I now have new friends.
Yeah, you certainly do.
It gives me something to do, too. You know, it keeps me off the streets.
Yeah. Well, you certainly do. You're one of the very recognizable figures in the world of podcasting. Certainly in the San Francisco Bay Area, that's true. Michael Butler, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Dr. Dave. Why am I sitting here nude?
Good one. Well, I'm sitting here with good podcast friends, and I did a thing that unfortunately I've done before, which is recorded this most incredible podcast interview with these friends, only to discover that it wasn't recording. In the past, sometimes I've forgotten to push the record button. On this particular instance, I plugged the microphone into the earphone jack. And so I had all of this priceless input, and we're going to try to recapture it after we've had a glass of wine and we've had dinner before we were doing it on an empty stomach. And so I'm hopefully we can recapture it. So I'm going to start off here with a good podcast soulmate, Suzanne Maiden of
Insight Works.
Too much wine. Insight Works and the DivaCast and Robin Maiden, her husband, they do the Insight Works together. And Carrie is here, and we're going to talk about the DivaCast with Carrie. But let me start first with Suzanne. So, Suzanne, say a little bit about the genesis of Insight Works and what drew you to podcasting.
David, hello. I just want to say that even though we already recorded a show, you know what? This is okay. This is great. The second time is better. Okay. So this is great. And the genesis you asked about Insight Works was I was in graduate school, and my husband said to me, hey, there's this new media called podcasting, and I think we should do it. And I thought, okay, you are crazy. I am a mother of an elementary school child, and I'm in graduate school, and I fly back and forth across the country once a month. You must be crazy. What are you talking about? And he said this would give you a voice that you could talk about depth psychology. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that piqued my interest. So we started recording insightworks.com. That's insightworks.com.
Yes, and at some point, I discovered that show. I don't remember if I discovered that through meeting you guys here or if I'd already, I think I'd already learned about the show, and then we ran into each other. But whichever way it went down, I immediately felt such, I think mutually we felt such rapport because we were both very much under the sway of Jungian psychology, very interested in it. And I really didn't expect to find anyone else in the podcast space who would be so invested in it. And I became a listener to your show, and I know that you've listened to mine as well. So what is it about, you know, because we're talking about psychology here, what is it in your psychology that makes this an important thing for you to do?
How long do we have, David? How long?
We have a few minutes, so take as much time as you want.
That's very generous. My own psychology. I don't know. I find it very gratifying to talk about Jungian concepts. That's not all we talk about. However, Jungian... Did I almost say I almost did say
That's okay. We can edit the ums out if we need to, and most of the time we don't need to.
What drew me to the whole podcasting and then to talk about depth psychology was just to have my own voice. And part of it, of course, is my own processing. Because while Robin and I talk about depth psychology, you certainly bring in your own dynamics, right? And
well, you two do bring in your own dynamics as a couple. And maybe it's time to get Robin in here, too. So, Robin...
Well, I'll say hi also, and I guess following up on some of the questions of how we got involved, it is an opportunity to share those things that are important to me and to Suzanne. You know, although Suzanne has gone to the school, I've always followed along as a layperson and have done my best to, you know, to continue my reading on depth psychology because I'm fascinated by the works of C.G. Jung and others, and so I try and be as well read as I can, even though I may not have the formal education in it. I think in our conversations that we have on Insight Works that Suzanne and I can have a pretty good banter back and forth. And I certainly hope that my lay reading certainly is not misinforming anyone in any strange directions that's inappropriate.
Well, it certainly isn't, because you bring such a integrity and dedication to looking at your own process and trying to apply these Jungian concepts to your own process that there's nothing misrepresented at all. In fact, I find that you're a role model, not only for the listeners out there, but for me as a listener, both in terms of your own internal process, Robin, and how you approach the material and how you approach your own life and how you approach the relationship between the two of you, but also the way you both do that. And you do it in such a way that at times when you disagree with one another, you're willing to put that out there. Yeah, what's that like for the two of you?
Well, it's very interesting because sometimes Robin and I will very clearly disagree, and the conversation continues even after the microphones are turned off.
Oh, I'll bet it does. I think I may have heard some where that might have happened.
And sometimes, though, it is probably not very flattering of myself as a self-depiction, but I will try to trump Robin and say, but I'm the one who went to school, and I'm the one who's better read. I don't know if I do that a whole lot. And I have to say, Robin is very well-read in the material. So when I would buy my textbooks, sometimes, as many of you guys know, Robin is an airline pilot, and he goes on these long trips. He would steal my textbooks and take them with him on trips, and I'm thinking, where's my homework book? I need to read.
Yeah, Robin's a good student. He's getting the material down, that's for sure. And this was very gratifying to me to have the opportunity to interview you guys here, because I wanted to try to capture something of the podcast expo while I'm here, and also it's putting me behind in terms of my podcast output. And so I thought, well, I can do a, maybe create a podcast here. And so I've been going around trying to interview other podcasters, but because my show is all about psychology, I wanted to have a psychological dimension. It's been really hard to pull some of the other psychologists in that direction. You know, they just don't want to go there because it's just not it's not familiar territory. So that's one reason why it's so refreshing to be here with you. Let's bring Carrie into this conversation. Carrie, you work with Suzanne and a group of friends on the Diva Cast. Maybe you can tell us something about that.
Well, first I want to say that I'm almost glad that we had the chance to do this over again, because initially I knew you for about 5 minutes.
Right.
And sitting here and having dinner with you, you're just a lovely, lovely person. And so it's really neat to be able to kind of come back at this again and have a conversation. The Diva Cast is five friends. We've been together for about 10 years, and when Suzanne did her dissertation or her thesis for her master's, she did Insight Works, and then she came back and said, suggested that we get together and do this podcast together as friends, and we blindly went into it. But it's turned out good. But you know, you could do some major psychology with us and with the group dynamics. It's been a wild ride, but.
Well, you've been doing the Diva Cast now for about a year, is that right?
A year and a half.
And so I imagine it's gone through a lot of changes. And I have the impression that you've developed a good-sized audience that other women are really able to identify.
David, we have developed a good-sized audience, and it truly is a blessing. We have listeners all over the world, and the relationship that we have with our listeners, I guess to me it's really mind-blowing. I'm shocked. We get beautiful emails asking us questions, women just being vulnerable and honest and authentic and sharing their own story, and it's very touching. And what the DivaCast, I think, realizes is it's not just the DivaCast and for us to do something like this, but it is also a way to touch many, many women worldwide. And really what the DivaCast tries to do is it tries to help women find not just that we are divas, these five women, but to encourage women to own their own inner diva within themselves.
Ah, yes, exactly. Finding that inner diva. Yeah, I think earlier we had discussed the fact that I've been in a men's group. You were talking about the support, that these are a group of friends, five friends in the Atlanta area, right, who have known each other for a number of years, and basically it's in a kind of a support group. And I've been in a men's group, which has also evolved into a support group for, 15 or 20 years now. I've kind of lost track. So it really is, and you know, I hate to rehash material that ground that we already covered, but when we first started out, we were sort of banging heads against each other. I guess our different egos, you know, trying to confront one another. Did you go through a period like that?
We're still in it, David. And I think it is just the way groups are, isn't it? No matter how educated, you could get a group of five therapists, and it would be the same way. I think when you bring in different egos and different hormonal energies. I'm thinking, you said you have this group of men, and that's a lot of testosterone.
Right.
And with us, it is the other end of the spectrum. It's a lot of estrogen. It's as if you would put five women in the kitchen and say, okay, you need to prepare and plan a gourmet meal, and you can do anything you want. What is it? And you'd have five women debating. I think we should have fish. No, I think we should have chicken. No, I think we should be casual. No, I think we should be formal. It's like that. So it takes a lot of compromise, but it's so worth it. While the process is hard and difficult, I think the joy in the product that we produce is very, very gratifying.
Okay. Carrie, let me ask you, what's the psychological angle for you? What does this do for your psyche?
Well, I mean, the whole purpose for me is to really just encourage other women. I mean, our group has been together, like I said, for 10 years, and we helped support Suzanne through her cancer, and just realizing that as women, we need to almost, I mean, I don't know if you see this, but a lot of women have to process things that are going on in their life by verbalizing and having a support system. And so we encourage other women to get these support groups around them, whether they're going through a crisis or they're, you know, we're all going to go through it, just to get that around them. And I guess it serves a purpose for me just to almost help build community, and almost like a volunteer effort. I mean, we'd like to have it more monetarily, you know, rewarding, but...
So what I'm hearing, though, is part of the impulse for you is really one of giving, of giving the gift of what you have experienced and learned in a supportive group.
Yeah. I mean, and just like you were saying with your men friends, I mean, and I said this earlier that I'm really impressed that, and I would love to hear more about that, because I don't think it's common to have men friends that are really geared towards working together and building that relationship. We talked about this earlier about... You can have these friendships, and they can be quite surface, or they can be supportive in a situation of like cancer. But when we have, like Suzanne was saying, we've got a lot of different opinions, and we've got to work through them for the final product or the final goal. And we've hit some rocks, we've hit some bumps, and in a normal situation, in a normal friendship, we could just get our distance and kind of, you know, let it fade away. But this podcasting endeavor is almost like marriage, where we have to be committed and we have to work through those rough places. And ultimately, if we do that, we do end up having a deeper relationship. But it's challenging.
I can imagine. It sort of put me in mind of that network TV show. Is it called The View? Where these women get together. But it sounds like, how would you compare what you're doing to The View?
I think it's very, very similar, except the difference with the DivaCast is really, I think, what we're trying to do is inspire women, again, to find their own divine feminine. And I say that maybe a little differently. Other divas would describe that differently than I would. But to me, it's to encourage women to embrace their own divine feminine.
Okay. And before we close off, I should give you a chance to let our listeners know about your other podcasts. I think Shrink Wrap Radio listeners would be particularly interested in your podcast, in which you're actually dispensing psychological advice, because I know sometimes they write me emails soliciting advice, and I'm not always forthcoming. So tell us about your other show.
Wow, thank you, David. The other show that I've just started is DearZanny.com. That's Z as in Z, A-N-N-Y.com. And that is a show. It's very, very short. It's 10 minutes in length, tops. It's a daily show where my listeners can either email me or leave a voicemail and ask questions about relationship advice. So it's really analogous to Ann Landers and Dear Abby. It's like that. So the show is exciting, and I'm glad to be doing it. But David, I have to say, I think your show is fabulous. I think you produce a top-notch, first-rate product, and I am just very honored to be... can I call you my colleague?
Definitely. And I'm honored to call you my colleague.
Thank you. Thank you. But just my friend. I'm honored to call you my colleague and my friend. And again, I think you produce a wonderful product. And remember how we were talking before? I know we've just had some people come in, so we're a little distracted.
Yeah.
However, I just think with you, your show truly is, again, analogous to somebody producing a gourmet product, and it's gourmet food. And sometimes people may not always understand that, because it's as if they have this beautiful food on their plate and they're poking at it going, what is this? And I think it is Dr. Dave at shrinkwrapradio.com.
And this was not a paid endorsement. I'm here with KFC from Podchick and Skydiver Girls, and I know that you're all about what you call positive vibe podcasting. So what do you mean by positive vibe? What is that all about?
Well, I think that if we surround ourselves with positive influences and we think about positive things and we aspire to do positive things, that that creates sort of a, well, you've all heard of the law of attraction, and I totally believe in that. And if you haven't heard of the law of attraction, please do look it up and also expose yourself to the movie The Secret. They talk a bit about it in that movie very well, actually. And I think that if you keep a positive focus and do these sorts of things, that positive things will happen for you. As a matter of fact, on my refrigerator at home, I have one of those little words everywhere, boxes of magnets that you stick up there. And I went through there and I took out any word that could be used in a negative way. And it's interesting because when people form sentences on my refrigerator, they're always something positive. And I think that that lifts people up to be able to be exposed to more positive influence.
Okay. Now, I know that you come from a corporate background and you kind of, I think, had a major change point that you hit in your life and kind of really changed direction. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised to work hard and, you know, nose to the grindstone and get your college education and this sort of thing and go out and be a corporate titan, really. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I was a military officer and doing really well and climbing that corporate ladder. Got out, went into software sales for a large corporate software firm. And more of this, you know, clawing my way to the top sort of thing. And I was very good at it. And I made a lot of money doing it. But you know what? The aftermath and the wake of all of the people that that I had to crush to get to the top kind of thing,
yeah,
which really isn't my style. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, crush to get to the top, because you hear that a lot, and you're surrounded by people whose ideal is really to do that. Surrounded by people, having lunch with people, going to meetings with people, working day in and day out with people who literally want to crush people to get to the top and are willing to lie, cheat, and steal to make more money and don't care that they're ruining other people's lives along the way, and they purposefully do it and like to grab the trophy when they're done kind of thing. And exposure to this sort of mentality really drained me. I liked being able to be successful at my job, and I liked being able to command a high dollar, but I didn't care for the competitive, backstabbing kind of environment that I saw all around me on a regular basis.
Was there a moment of epiphany that you had where you kind of saw where your life was going and made a decision to change the direction?
Actually, there was. It's kind of ironic, really, because it was my corporate savvy that enabled me to have this enlightening experience. And what that is, I went skydiving. And when I went skydiving, I thought, oh my gosh, the serenity and the perspective, and I don't know, it changes your world when you see things from such a different perspective. And I know I just used that word twice and I hate to do that, but when you're 14,000 feet above the earth and you look down, it's not just a physical, hey, everything looks small. It's a psychological, hey, everything is small. There's something that snaps in your brain when you do that. So let that be a warning to you who haven't done it yet. You will finally, this is a common story actually. People, after they do skydiving for a little bit, go, wow, you know, there are so many other things that are more important. And they become involved in charities and they become involved in trying to help human kindness. And they skydiving, and I'm not saying all skydivers are awesome or anything like that, because there's, you know, a mix in every group. But a lot of us have this common, wow, I can't believe that I used to get wrapped up around this crap at work. And I can't believe I used to get wrapped up around being better than the Joneses. Or I can't believe I used to get wrapped up around all these insignificant material things that we used to hold dear, that once you become involved in something like skydiving, you're like, wow, you know, none of that's important. This beauty that I have in my life and in my relationships with other people is something that you can't buy, something that you can't win, is something that you have to just take a deep breath and stand back and absorb and enjoy and become a part of. And I wasn't able to do that until I had enough money from the corporate world to do it, because in this case, skydiving is quite expensive. But I did make a lot of money in the corporate world, and I did quit my job. And for 2 years, all I did was skydive and meet people and do things I wanted to do. And I found that what I really wanted to do was empower other people to find their sweet spot and their, oh gosh, I want to credit the woman that said this the other day, happy button, she said. Hit your happy button. And I just, it's so true. You can do that. And people can be led and taught and shown how to do that. I think that a lot of us don't think you can do that, but you can do that. There is a happy button. We all have it. We all can learn to hit it ourselves whenever we need to, like a morphine drip, baby, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that people know where they can find your podcast. We're both fans of one another's podcasts, and I've checked out your podcast, and I know from time to time you listen to my podcast. Where can your podcast be found?
The Podchick Show at podchick.com. That's podchick.com. And that show is a lot like yours, very, very geared toward empowering and educating people about how to live a positive and happy life. And, of course, you're a qualified and trained professional doctor. And I have a disclaimer on mine every now and again. I'll throw it in. Oh, by the way, I'm just some, you know, girl that's found a way to live happy, and I wanted to share that with other people. But I'm not a doctor. And then there's ScottEverGirls.com, where I carry the same flavor, or at least I like to think that I do, about empowerment and living happy and enjoying yourself. But it's also got a little more of a daredevil, cutting edge kind of, hey, we jump out of planes, we're crazy, but we're having fun and we love each other. And so I try to carry that through. And I hope that I do that in all of the works that I do from here on throughout the rest of my life. I hope that there's always an underlying theme of enjoying your life and being happy and making your circle a positive place to be and growing that circle.
Okay, KFC, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio at the Pod Show and New Media Expo.
It's a pleasure to be here, David. I really am thrilled to be on your show. I've been a big fan of your show for a long time, and I thank you very much for your time.
I'm sitting here with podcaster Trucker Tom, who is a very colorful-looking character with tattoos all over his body and his head. So tell us about your podcast, first of all.
Well, I started podcasting back in December of 2004.
Wow, that makes you one of the pioneers. I didn't realize you went back that far.
Yep, I found out about Adam Curry probably just maybe 3 months after he actually started podcasting. I found out about it, and I realized what it was. And for many years, I didn't know what it was, but I wanted control. You know, I wanted something like podcasting, because one of the things podcasting does, it gives you the perfect control over what you're downloading, and therefore, what, you know, you're controlling your own playlist. Because traditional broadcast, if you listen to the radio or you're watching TV, they're in charge of the playlist. You're just kind of having to suffer through it. Whatever they throw up there, if they try to throw ads at you or whatever it is, they're in control of the playlist. Well, podcasting, what got me excited about it and what keeps me excited about it is that I'm in charge of that playlist. I have control.
You're talking about as a listener, you have control.
Of course. And so, but I immediately knew that I wanted to do a podcast. I didn't know what it was. I floundered around a bit in the first few episodes, and it kind of quickly evolved into whatever I was thinking about. And, of course, since I'm driving a truck, it also included, you know, I was traveling here and traveling there, and I would casually talk about that, but that's not really the focus is more about kind of what I'm thinking about. And so people seem to enjoy that.
So you're doing kind of a stream of consciousness while you're driving your truck?
Yeah, a lot of times I can record while I'm driving my truck, or afterwards I'll use Cast Blaster and just record into the computer directly. And I have the ability, if I'm thinking about something, I have the ability to just sit and just really talk about it and, you know, really put my thoughts together and hopefully make sense.
And you were telling me before that you've been a trucker for some time and that you tried office work and it just didn't work for you. So tell us a little bit about that, and what is it about your psychology that driving a truck appeals to you?
Well, first of all, a lot of people that end up driving a truck, I think, end up kind of a little bit jaded because... or not, jaded may not be the right word, but they end up sort of almost screwed, because you if you drive a truck over the road especially, you've got a lot of independence. You don't have even though they're tracking the truck, you don't have a boss kind of breathing down your neck all the time, wanting you to look busy even if you don't have anything to do. Because all you can really do in a truck is you get from point A to point B without destroying the equipment, and the trucking company is usually happy about that. And once you've experienced that kind of freedom, you know, especially if you're kind of a self-starter and you're able to make those delivery and loading appointments, then you try to go back to a job where you've got all kinds of office politics going on, which you cannot escape. If you put two people together in a workplace, you're going to have politics because people are going to start getting jealous of each other, and you know, maybe they're thinking that the other person's making more than they are, and it's just the typical sob story that's in every workplace where people are together. So there's driving a truck, you can actually eliminate that. If you drive a truck over the road, you actually eliminate that. So I've a couple of times tried to work in offices. The first time was a year and a half, stuck it out a year and a half. I was working in a trucking company office, sort of a problem resolution department for drivers. And so every call that I got on the phone, I was on the phone about 8 hours a day, every call was a problem I had to solve. And it was very frustrating because everything that I did, I had to do through this computer system that was very slow. You'd press the button sometimes, and 30 seconds later it would respond. You know, and you have four or five people in line in queue on the, you know, on hold. They're getting frustrated, and I'm getting frustrated. So I went back to driving a truck over the road. And then most recently, I've always been a big computer geek, so most recently I thought, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice? I always thought, wouldn't it be nice if I had a job working with computers? Well, so I ended up as a network administrator at this large eye clinic in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And the problem, it turned out to be, you know, here I was right in the middle of the politics again, and of course there were constantly politics going on, you know, down on the clinic floor. There was, you know, people, they had a bunch of employees, and there was lots of politics. So I tried to stay upstairs in this little cubicle that I had upstairs, or I would volunteer to leave the office, you know, to go, maybe they needed something from Office Depot or whatever. I was always volunteering to do that just to get away from there. And after, so I stuck that out for 2 years, and I realized I'm not happy with this. It's probably going to affect my health if I try to stay with it. Then the other thing, if you stay away from trucking too long, now the companies, what they're trying, they want you to have recent experience. And so I was right at the edge of, if I wanted to go back to trucking, if I waited much longer, I would have ended up having to go back through training, you know, because it had been probably about 3.5 years since I'd done the over-the-road thing. So I just went ahead and made the decision to come back to trucking, and, you know, haven't looked back.
Okay, so it sounds like trucking is a great occupation for people who want to be independent, don't like a boss looking over their shoulder, want to make their own decisions. Tell people where they can hear your podcast.
Sure. It's TruckerTomPodcast.com. You just type in, you go to Google, you type in Trucker Tom, and I've actually got more hits than Adam Curry.
Wow.
I don't know how I
was going to say, off mic, I'm going to have to ask you how you did that.
I have no idea.
I'm also sitting here with Michael Dell. You don't own a big computer company by any chance, do you?
I wish I did. But I get that quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, so you're the other Michael Dell.
No, I'm the first one.
And Michael, you're a podcaster. You're also a ham radio operator. You and I had a good talk at one of the parties here about ham radio things. Tell us about your podcast.
Okay, I do too. I do a stream of consciousness podcast called The Benzoid Report. And just type that in Google, you'll find it. Yeah, sort of like Tom's, except for I don't have as much time behind the wheel to do it. And then I also do the ham radio pod classes. We've right now currently got the technician course, which is the entry-level license, and we have the general course, which is the second-level license. And that I've done with a friend of mine, John Martin. KF8KK is his call sign. Anybody interested in that?
Okay, I wish that kind of thing had been around when I was studying for my licenses. Podcasting didn't exist yet at that point. So you're a podcaster, and you also talk on amateur radio. What's the difference for you, and what's the draw for you in podcasting?
Well, it's all communications. I've always been accused of talking too much. So, you know, ham radio was sort of a natural hobby. And then I work a night shift job where I'm working alone most of the time. And I used to listen to AM talk radio. And, you know, just to keep awake. If I listened to music, I'd get sleepy. And, you know, I didn't want them to find me at my desk in the morning sleeping. So I found Adam Curry and Trucker Tom and
Shrink Wrap Radio, right?
And, oh, yeah, and Shrink Wrap Radio, of course. And in about July of 2005, I started the Benzoid Report just as a hobby, and it just went from there.
Okay, yeah, I'm always thrilled when I encounter a listener, and we kind of bumped into each other at one of the parties here. And I don't remember if you recognized my voice or if you just saw that you did. Yeah, that tends to happen as people, I guess I have a distinctive voice and people overhear it. I've been at conventions and so on. People say, hey, I know who you are. So that's always a thrill. So thanks a lot, guys. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed these behind-the-scenes glimpses of a few of my podcasting buddies. Next year's expo will be in Las Vegas, which reflects the growing importance of this new medium. In all likelihood, I'll be there. If you've listened to this show for any length of time, you'll have figured out that I'm a bit of a gadget freak. And part of the joy of going to these events for me is to see what new software and hardware is out there for podcasting. I've told you that the sponsorship of Podshow and GoDaddy helps to support this proclivity of mine, so thanks to them I was able to purchase a new piece of hardware and a new software package. I'm not using either one yet, so I'll tell you more about those purchases on the next show. Don't forget you can save money on your domain and web hosting purchases at GoDaddy by using Shrink3 at checkout. Once again, this has run a bit long, so I'm going to skip the mail and other news. Let me remind you that you can send voice comments using the My Chingo button on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com, and that you can also leave comments on our blog there. Please do. You can also send email to me at shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com, and you can call us and leave a message at 206-337-0622. Also, look for our new survey question on the website. We have a new poll at shrinkwrapradio.com, which asks whether you'd be interested in buying a Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt. I've long wondered if people would be interested in that, so let me know by taking the poll. Also, there have been no new additions to the Frapper map in weeks. So if you're not on there, you'll find a link on our website and you can add yourself to our map. It's not completely locked in at this point, but I think my next show will feature an interview with spiritual teacher and author Nook Sanchez. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.